I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 9:03 a.m. on Thursday, January 25, 2018. And present today, we have Representative Ortiz, Representative Kawasaki, Representative Wilson, Vice Chair Guerra, Co-Chair Seaton, Representative Tilton, Representative Gren, Representative Guttenberg, Representative Thompson, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And before we start, just a reminder, folks could please mute their cell phones. And at this meeting, we'll have initial hearings on HB 287, the Education and Student Transportation Appropriation Bill. That's by Representative Seaton. And then we will also be hearing HB 213, which is a bill relating to the Public School Trust Fund by Representative Parrish. And my plan is to introduce both bills today and hear public testimony. Just a note, before 10 a.m., just before 10 a.m., we'll have to take a break. But we'll figure out, I don't know how long that'll take, but we'll try and come back after that. And so with that, HB 287, an act making appropriations for public education and transportation of students. And so at this time, I would like to call Representative Seaton's aides, Arnie Liebelt and Elizabeth Diament, to the table. And I also see we have Representative Co-Chair Seaton. So if you could all just please go ahead and place yourselves on the record and proceed with your PowerPoint presentation.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Committee. This is Representative Paul Seaton, District 31, Homer and Lower Kenai Peninsula.
My name is Arnold Liebelt, staff to Representative Seaton.
Elizabeth Diament, staff to Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Of course, House Bill 287 is looking at a separate appropriation bill to get done early and separately from the full operating budget, which takes longer to get through. The genesis of this bill came from the convention of the superintendents who met in Seward, and I was invited to be on a panel there, co-chair of finance on the operating budget. We had Senator Michicki, vice chair of the Senate Finance Committee, and Representative Chenault, who is the whip of the House minority. And so during our panel discussion, the big issue that was brought forward by the superintendents is that that it's very inefficient for them to write two or three budgets and to go through all of the problems that they had and they were experiencing last year, the very much delay of the funding for schools, and so that they had to lay off all the non-tenured teachers by May 15th, give them termination notices, and they lost, almost every district lost good people that they wanted to retain because people couldn't know what they were going to do, whether they were going to have a contract for the next year, and so they would take another job somewhere else. And so all of that expense of hiring new teachers was lost at that point in time, lost good personnel. So they were asking us for some solution, and I had talked to the superintendents that the House majority was not going to, just like last year, we were not going to cut basic education. And Senator Michicki said that this year the Senate had decided it was not going to cut education either. And then the question came over to Representative Chenault, and he said, well, you know, we could do like some other states do and pass every agency budget separately. And, of course, he was, from his experience as Speaker and as past co-chair of finance here, he knew that would be a very difficult process, and it was kind of left on the table. And then we picked that up and said, well, why don't we do the one early funding that we need to do because we require in statute that people get terminations from their contracts. And so that was the genesis for this. So when we could see that the House majority, the House minority, and the Senate were aligned, then how do we accomplish that? Well, That's what House Bill 287 is. We're actually trying to accomplish what was set out there is early funding of education, of basic education. We've taken the governor's number, which he took from the previous year, and basically are doing all basic education that would require any teacher layoffs. So that includes not only the BSA and pupil transportation, but also the boarding schools in Mount Edge. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, we have a PowerPoint, and I would like to go ahead and leave that to my staff to run through with the committee, and at the end, I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee has.
Thank you, Representative Quitcher Seaton. And so with that, we could go ahead and proceed with the PowerPoint.
I want to pull your mic up just a little bit.
Good morning. Again, my name is Arnold Liebelt, Staff to Representative Seaton. So with that introduction of the bill, I'm just going to go through the slide presentation. We have 9 slides here. It's fairly brief. It is an appropriations bill, so it's different than other bills. I'd appreciate it, Mr. Chair, if I could just go through all the slides first and then be happy to answer questions at the end of the presentation.
We'll go ahead and do that.
The title on the front, I'd like to speak just for a few minutes. It is a standalone, and what I mean by that is we're carving out, as the sponsor has spoken, we're carving out that part of the regular operating budget that pertains to education that goes through school districts through the department and making that a separate appropriations bill. It is written just as any other appropriations bill. There's the Section 1, which is the number sections of the bill. That appropriates the funds for the the boarding home grants, youth in detention, the special schools, Mount Edgecombe Boarding School, Mount Edgecombe Boarding School facilities and maintenance, and part of the foundation program. Section 2 of the bill identifies the funding for the Department of Education. Section 3 of the bill identifies the funding sources and the amounts of those funding sources. And Section 4 of the bill is the language section, and that pertains to the use of the constitutional budget reserve at a fixed amount of $1.2 billion and an estimated amount of the statutory budget reserve at $67 million. The idea, once again, of making this a standalone is that this part of the operating budget would move in advance, would move ahead, receiving fairly broad support that it can move through the budget process quicker than the regular operating budget and get approved and getting those funding decisions for state aid to the school districts in advance and in a timely manner. So with that, we'll go ahead and proceed through here. So those comments basically, what I just said were what we have on slide 2. Avoid the unnecessary teacher layoff notices due to passage of state operating budget after school districts plan their budgets, and that is what we are trying to avoid. It is important to know that the amount that we are requesting through HB 287 is the same amount that is being requested in the governor's request for education. It appropriates, again, the $1.2 billion from the CBR and an estimated amount from the SBR. If we go to slide 3, HB 287 is on the far right side. These are the allocations, appropriations for education funding. And you'll note that the amount that is being requested is the same amount that is in the governor's request and is substantially similar to the 18 management plan. So we're not asking for, the bill isn't asking for a difference in the funding, just the funding source and in the hopes of moving it through the process quicker. So going through slide 4, education is required by the Constitution, is a high priority program that has broad support that legislators have supported. The CBR, you know, this slide, I guess, just to back up a little bit, you know, looking at why, I think there's a lot of questions. Why is it that we're proposing to use the CBR in our savings account and our SBR? And the real reason is the CBR earns a lower interest rate when compared to other funds. So if we look at it compared to the earnings reserve account, within the permanent fund earns substantially more revenue. And I have a few more slides coming up on that. And so if we are looking at the earnings reserve account at generating revenue for future programs, high priority programs, then it would make sense for us to use the $1 billion from the CBR, still leaving a balance of over $1 billion in the CBR after the draw, and preserving the earnings reserve account to generate additional revenue for state programs. The CBR and the earnings reserve account really are the only accounts that have sufficient funds to fund education and pupil transportation. GF revenue, UGF revenue this year is estimated at $2 billion, about $2 billion, so clearly there's not going to be enough GF. I think it's fair to say that there has been recognized that the CBR is going to be need to be used in some manner to get the budget through. The governor proposed $400 million. Legislative finance is saying that that number is probably closer to $425 million use of the CBR. And so if we're looking at using the constitutional budget reserve to get passed to get a budget passed, and if there's broad support for funding education, then HB 287 is a solution to doing that. We're using a funding source which we know we're going to need to be tapping into to get the budget through and making timely decisions for our school districts.
I'd like to mention, Representative Parrish joined us from the very start, so I appreciate your being here. Thank you. Sorry, please proceed.
The next several slides are slides that prepared by Legislative Finance Division. Slide 5 is the balance of the Constitutional Budget Reserve and the Statutory Budget Reserve. And the column to note on the far right is if the bill passes in its current form, the amounts that would be left is over $100 million in the SBR and over $1 billion in the CBR. If we go to slide 6, and this is a comparison between the CBR in the solid color and the permanent fund in the striped color. And if we look at the earnings just in FY17, which are on the left between the two funds, and the earnings, the projected earnings over a 10-year period, and they're on the far right. And so you can, if we look at the long-term first and the 10-year earnings, it's estimated that the CBR will earn about 2.38% per year, whereas the permanent fund will earn estimated at 6.5% a year. So clearly in the long-term, there's greater earning capacity for generating additional revenue. If we look at the FY17 earnings alone, the permanent fund had a very good year at 12.89% compared to the 1.83%. And so that is the reason for why we're looking at using the CBR, is to preserve that earning capacity of other high earning funds. Similarly, we could look at it this way. If we look over a 10-year forecast, again with the CBR and with the permanent fund, and if we start off at the $1.2 billion, the amount that is requested through this appropriations bill, and we look at the change of earnings over time, and if you get to year 10 and comparison between 6.5% versus 2.3% return, the permanent fund would earn $650 million, whereas the CBR would earn $238 million. Of course, you know, it's. I think it's important to point out this is looking at a forecast. Some of these years will probably be much higher performing, and some of the years in there will be much lower performing for at least the permanent fund. I think the CBR is designed to be much more liquid to have that funding available, serving as a shock absorber for the state operating budget. So that would be more stable. But over the long term, and that's what we're looking at here, is that the ERA would be certainly outperforming the CBR. So on the last slide, just to wrap it up here, and as the sponsor was saying, the really impetus of this is that funding decisions or the operating budget has been passed late in the year, and that can be very energy intensive and very emotional for school districts and for superintendents that are trying to put their budget together in a timely manner, trying to hold off on issuing of layoff notices for their tenured and non-tenured teachers. And so this is a solution to do that. If we look back in the past, in 2015, there is a special session was required to bring the legislature back through a special session bill, which was passed by the legislature on June 11th and signed by the governor on June 29th. In 2016, the budget was passed on May 31st and signed by the governor on June 28th. Just last session, FY18, the budget was passed on July 22nd and signed by the governor on July 1st. So this is, unfortunately, and I think we're all aware, you know, times are very difficult. There's a lot of debate on how to get to a balanced budget and what those numbers are. So this is being put out there as a solution to address this for the school districts, which are really out there trying to do their job, trying to keep their teachers, trying to deal with many of the other issues that they are facing. And if we can address the education appropriation portion of the budget so that school districts do not have to go through that, we could take that part off the table, and that would definitely serve the school districts and I think the state better in the long term. In just that last paragraph, funding uncertainty forces school districts to draft multiple budgets. For tenure teachers, they must be served their pink slips non-tenure teachers, it's by May 15th, and for tenure teachers, it's by the last day of school. And so looking at when the budget's passed, you can see the delay in there. And just on our last slide, I think education is very important. It is one of the highest priority programs for the state, and educators are shaping our future generations. And so we are looking at this bill as a reflection of the importance of education to our state. So again, it's an appropriations bill. It's fairly straightforward. It's, the funding sources are the CBR and trying to get this moved through the budget process in advance of the operating budget. And with that, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer those. And I would like to mention that if there are any specific questions which deal more with education, we do have Alexi Painter with Legislative Finance Division in the room as well.
Okay, real good. Thank you, Mr. Liebelt. And so with that, as was mentioned, Legislative Finance Fiscal Analysis, Alexi Painter is here for answering questions. And so do we have any questions of the committee before we go on to public testimony? Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So back on slide 3, could you please explain on Mount Edgecombe, we're going up approximately $806,000, which comes out about $2,000 per student. But if we look at the foundation program, which everybody else falls underneath, we're actually decreasing funding.
If I may, I'd like to ask Alexi Painter to answer that
Mr.
question.
Mr. Painter, if you could put yourself on the record.
Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. Representative Wilson, there's two things that happened why that went up. One is the addition of the Mount Edgecombe Boarding School facilities maintenance allocation. That's a structure change from previous years. Before, that maintenance was included in the overall department-wide state facilities maintenance appropriation, which was separate, so that got moved. And then in the actual Mount Edgecombe Boarding School allocation itself, in previous years, the department had used unbudgeted interagency receipts for part of that funding and to cover both federal funds and foundation funds that were coming in that were not in the budget, so they did an increase of those funds. There's no increase in general funds to Mount Edgecombe in this. It's really just a budget true-up. And the department is also here, and they may be able to speak to that more specifically.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I can understand that maybe other funds weren't there, so I guess it's hard on these numbers to know because we don't know the difference between which are federal, which are UGF. This is just the amount of money, or is it all UGF that's going into here?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, there's actually no UGF going to Mount Edgecombe in the governor's budget or House Bill 287. Previously, there were some funds that was in FY17 and before, but that portion has been switched to the public school trust fund. That amount, however, is unchanged between FY18 and FY19. So the difference is interagency receipts of $250,000 and federal funds of $250,000. I think I'm missing one other non-GF fund source in there for the remaining balance.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
I guess I'm still confused on the, because we're still going down on the formula when it comes to the rest of the schools.
And so, I mean, there could be a funding difference, but since the bill I don't think is going to move today, maybe we could just get the breakdown, you know, in an email of what they thought they were going to get and what they didn't get, so that we can see whether there's really an increase or it's just a difference in the funding portion of it. But one other question is, do you know what the student count was statewide for last year and what it was for October this last year?
Left it over there, so hang on.
While we're getting that, who here is from the Department of Education? Great. Just so we know. Thank you.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, the student count in FY19, the average daily membership for non-correspondent students was 116,814. I do not have the FY18 in front of me, but it was slightly higher, so the department is anticipating a slight decline between FY18 and FY19. There's actually a larger decline between FY17 and FY18, so that's the bigger difference. This is a pretty small one, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Gurr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Alexi, just on the issue of the changing foundation formula amounts, do I have this correct? In 2015, we passed a base student allocation bill that had base student allocation funding plus $43 million of separate money that was distributed as if it was base student allocation money. That's the green part. And then that part disappeared, but in the next 2 years, we added two $50 base student allocation increases. So you lost the 43, but then you added about 30. And does that account for the slight dip, roughly?
Representative Guerra, through the chair. Yes, you can see the I think it's greenish. These colors are a little odd. Bar in FY15 of $43 million, that's the outside the formula funding, and that's the amount after a supplemental was taken, you know, took out the amounts for FY16 and FY17. And then you see the increases in FY16 and 17 going up about $30 million over in the foundation program, and then that amount declined slightly in subsequent years, but that's actually just a matter of the student count. The base student allocation in FY17, 18, and 19 are the same.
Representative Pruitt?
Yeah, thank you. So in relation to the conversation about the CBR, and I don't know, maybe Alexi might be able to answer this question. We've had discussions in the past about the utilization of the CBR basically as our checking account. We can utilize the money as long as it's filled by the end of the year. We're able to utilize that. This would take us from the 2.2 that we're in now. We expected to see it drop some, but it takes us down to $1 billion. I think we heard testimony a couple days ago from either the OMB director or a commissioner of revenue that $1 billion was kind of their limit. Do we have mechanisms with the PFD organization, whether it's the corporation, to be able to also use that as a checkbook if we start to move below the framework that they have indicated we need to maintain in the CBR to be able to use that as kind of a checking account scenario?
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, I'm probably not the best person to ask about that, but $1 billion is basically the minimum that we would need in the constitutional budget reserve to maintain cash flow. Future years, you could use the percent of market value as part of that if there is a draw, but I'm not sure what the specifics would be about doing that. And at this point, no draws have actually been authorized, so we don't really know how that would work.
Yeah, thank you, Alexi. And maybe for Mr. Lebel, maybe the question here would be, so if the expectation is to pull $1.2 billion out, and we've heard that that this year's need is somewhere around that $425 million, I think, as you referenced. This is about three times that draw. Is the expectation then to change the amount both, I believe, from the governor's budget, as well as I think I may have heard some other people within the legislature indicate that there is, whether it may not be through a bill, but actually done through the budget some sort of POMV from the permanent fund, is the expectation to lower that draw from the permanent fund by that $800 million, or would we still draw out that full POMV amount in the budget, which would be put us at about $800 million more than would be necessary, I believe, this particular year?
Mr. Chairman. Representative Seaton.
Since that's more of a policy issue,
okay,
don't mind it. The idea here is that we need to maintain $1 billion in CDR. We need a pot of money that is available to actually, if we're going to pass a early budget and have the governor sign it and have that done, there is basically no money at the end of the year in the general fund. That, you know, it's all planned with headroom and supplementals and everything, so there is not funding there. Income comes over time. So this is the pot of money that we know is there that we can fund this portion of the budget, and when the governor signs the bill, there is identified funding sources. The expectation is that there will be a similar POMV draw from the budget reserve to fund the budget. You know, you only have so many places where we have money around, and but you know, that's going to be a decision by the legislature as to where it balances its budget from, what savings accounts. That's, you know, the expectation at this point in time. Could other decisions be made? Yes, but this draw would allow the POMV done at the lower rate that the permanent fund has now called sustainable, at their 6.5 interest rate instead of the 6.95 return rate, that because they've just adopted the long-term 6.5 return rate on the estimated projected for the fund. So this would allow us to have a sustainable draw and fund the budget.
So follow up on that.
Representative Pruitt.
So to kind of finish on this particular subject, and there is another question related to the, and you've hit on it several times, and I think we have to ask about it. But so if what I heard you say is your expectation is that we will not draw, if this were to pass and we were to use the CBR, we will not draw more than what is necessary to complete just the budget that would end up being passed afterwards. There would not be additional drawn for putting in to other funds, putting into the CBR, anything. That kind of $800 million cushion, I don't really know how to term it, that will not be drawn from the ERA. That will remain in there to, as was presented, earn more interest than it would if we had done this subsequently the same thing from the CBR.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to be clear, there is always has to be in the budget some headroom, whether it was in the CBR draw. Here we're not using headroom from the CBR. We're funding our education budget, which we have to fund. So that would be the 1.2 fixed amount. So that doesn't provide any headroom for a budget. So whatever budget comes out has to have something for supplementals. Otherwise, we're going to be back in special sessions or whatever, trying to take care of any fire seasons or anything else, because there wouldn't be that headroom that's available to actually fund the budget. I mean, our CBR draws in the past have always included some amount of headroom so that the money could, if it was needed, was available to the general fund to pay the bills. So I wouldn't say that we're going to take the budget and zero it out, because then if there's any money over that, then it wouldn't be there. But our anticipation is not to draw more than necessary for the budget and the headroom that's necessary. So we're not trying to drain more money than necessary. In fact, the idea is not to take the 5.25%, but I think that we can get by with the 4.5% draw because we're funding the education budget through the CBR.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Pruitt.
One more follow-up. And this is kind of in, it's a little different, but it's still in that policy call. Mr. Chair, it sounds like the need for this particular bill has arisen from the failure to the legislature to really succeed in accomplishing, whether it's the 90-day goal, whether it's the May 15th goal, the May 31st goal. It seems like this has come out of that. We are 11 days into the session. This is only an appropriations bill for this year. This is how we're going to do it into the future. Is there an expectation being sent by this bill being presented to us that we will not accomplish our work within the 90 days or by the May 15th day or by the May 31st day, these days that these pink slips have to go out? Are we not planning for failure with this particular bill? I would expect our goal would still to be out of here by 90 days, hence plenty of time before that pink slip date for the non-tenured teachers of May 15th, which we moved to that date a couple years ago to take some of that pressure off of our local communities, because prior to that it was in March. Is this kind of signals of more what we should expect should come in the future in this legislative session?
Representative Pruitt, Seaton.
Well, as the members probably know, there is a bill on the other side that is looking at telling the next legislatures what to do. This is trying to accomplish now what we are doing is early funding of education. The exact parameters of that bill, I'm sure there'll probably be amendments over there. We'll be looking to see whether there's amendments from this committee as well as that comes through. So we need to figure out what we're going to do in the future, but we don't want to put off to the future and not do it this year. And so the only way to do it this year is to do a early funding bill. The question is, do people want to, the only other pot of money that you could attach to this appropriation would be taking money out of the ERA, which is a high earning account. And I don't think that most people want to take the money, first of all, this early in the session. Do they want to go to the ERA and not do a POMV and just go in and take some money? I think that's what we're trying to avoid, is ad hoc draws from the ERA. And so this takes it from the CBR as the sole pot of money that's available to fund education if we're going to do it early. That's, you know, there are other decisions that the legislature has to make, but on this decision, at least when we had the meeting with myself, Senator Michicki, and Representative Chenault, there was general agreement that we wanted to go forward with an early funding bill, and this is the only pot of money without making a decision for an ad hoc draw from the ERA to work on. And if we have consensus among the majority and the minority in the House and the majority and the minority in the Senate, then I think that we can go forward and accomplish the goal of early funding of education.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pruitt. I'd like to recognize that we're just joined by Representative Drummond, a big advocate for education, as we all are. So I just want to say thank you for being here. Next up, we've got Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when I first looked at this bill, the first question came, could we fund it with general funds? But I think from legislative finance, what I suspected and what I think we all understand is, with the deficit that we have, and until somebody takes big action to fix the deficit, right now any general fund money that's coming in today goes right out to pay bills from FY18. So there is no general fund balance. And so the hope that this could be funded with general funds, it just doesn't exist if we're going to do early funding of education. And so that's why Representative Seaton is right. Your only two options are the CBR, or you could go the next step and take it out of the permanent fund, which I think I agree would not be what I would want to do right now.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. Do we have any further questions of the committee? Seeing none, we will move right into public testimony. And so with that, I will formally open public testimony for HB 287. And I'd like to also let the public know that if you're watching, you can also submit public testimony to House Finance, no spaces. So that's housefinance@akleg.gov. Again, housefinance@akleg.gov. So I've got a number of people both online and in the room. I'm going to start at the top of my list. It looks like we have 13 people. We do have to, we've got four of us who need to leave at 4 o'clock. Let me take a brief at ease just to see if we want to continue on with the meeting or, I'm sorry, at 10 o'clock. Is that 4 o'clock? In 20 minutes, so brief at ease. Okay, House Finance is back on record, and we are in public testimony. So starting at the top of the list here, we have David Piazza from the Southwest Region School District in Dillingham. David, are you there?
I am, thank you.
Thank you. If you could put yourself on the record. And I have noted here that we may want to limit public testimony to 2 minutes. I'm going to be flexible here and maybe call it three, but it's going to be ish, and so we're not going to hold folks unless we start getting into a 15-minute testimony, then we might start having to limit things. But Mr. Piazza, if you could just put yourself on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chairs Foster and Seaton, members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Piazza, superintendent of the Southwest Region School District. As many of you have previously heard, school districts need notice of funding levels as early as possible to help planning efforts for the upcoming school years. Although Southwest Region did not send out pink slips to employees last year, the district did hesitate on making hiring decisions early. This made for a long and drawn-out hiring season. Where the district normally has all of its positions filled by June 1st, the district had several vacancies, including two principal teacher positions into the summer months. While the pool of candidates still contain quality individuals, the number of candidates are very limited, especially the ones that have made up their mind to seek their calling in Alaska. The district supports measures by the legislature to secure funding early to help public school systems, including the Department of Education, as well as local schools, to plan effectively and efficiently. The district supports House Bill 287. Thank you for your attention in this matter.
Thank you very much for your testimony all the way out there in Dillingham, Mr. Piazza. Do we have any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, we'll move on to the next location. The off-nets, we have three people calling in from the off-nets. Sean Dusick, are you there?
Thank you, Chair Foster and the rest of the members of the committee. My name is Sean Dusick, and I'm the superintendent of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. Again, thank you for the opportunity to speak on this bill, which I support and greatly appreciate the efforts by Representative Seaton and the other sponsors to provide certainty to school districts in Alaska. Recent legislative sessions have seen a great deal of discussion on how to solve Alaska's current fiscal reality. While this discussion is extremely important, and we want to be a part of that discussion and help solve the issues, it has also led to delaying state budgets being passed until well into the summer months. By statute, school districts must make staffing decisions no later than mid-May. There is a disconnect between school-related statute and recent legislative budget development practice. This has forced districts to either lay off staff or delay hiring of staff to protect against fiscal insolvency. The Kennett Peninsula Borough School District has had to make many difficult decisions over the past few years due to fiscal problems. While flat funding from the state does not cover the rising costs occurring in Alaska and its school districts, it does, in this bill, provide certainty for districts to work with local communities through the budget process in a timely manner that allows for the hiring and recruitment of high-quality teachers. While this bill is a large piece of the puzzle to provide certainty for districts if passed in a timely manner, there are other pieces that must also be put in place. These pieces include funding for TERS and PERS, along with funding for bond debt reimbursement. Healthcare costs must also be addressed. I support this bill and urge its timely passage within the 90-day session. I urge the legislature to also address the other areas of funding education in a timely manner. Addressing a complete funding package will provide schools and communities a high level of certainty so we can provide an excellent education every day for our students. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Dusick. Do we have any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, thank you. Dina Bishop, calling in from Anchorage, are you there?
Yes, thank you.
If you could put your name and your affiliation on the record and proceed.
Hi, I'm Dina Bishop, the superintendent of Anchorage School District. As superintendent of Anchorage School District, I would like to offer my support for House Bill 287 to provide known funding for education as a separate early appropriation. Early funding will help avoid unnecessary layoff notices, as was stated. As Representative Seaton stated as well, the statutory deadline for teacher layoff notices to go out is the 15th of May for tenured teachers and the last day of school for non-tenured, typically the third week in May for ASB. During this past legislative session, state budget negotiations went beyond the aforementioned statutory deadlines. Funding levels were uncertain, and ASB was forced to issue layoff notices to 223 teachers. Some legislators at the time were calling for a 3-5% cut to K-12 education. The risk for ASD was too high to avoid issuing the layoff. Most of the teachers that received layoff notices were recalled, but the loss of morale surrounding the layoffs has been felt all year. The timeline for hiring quality applicants is also directly impacted by later uncertain funding. Just in general, I appreciate your support for public education. I would like to reiterate my support for having funding for education early in the legislative process as a separate appropriation. This will take the guessing game, as to speak, out of our budget process. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Bishop. Do we have any questions of the committee? Okay, seeing no questions, thank you. David Neese, calling in from Anchorage, are you there?
Yeah, hi, this is David Neese. I'm a head researcher at Alaska Policy Forum. I was on the House Sustainable Education Task Force. And as we predicted, you would eventually be at this situation. You have to take a look at your funding for the system. So to be clear, the bill actually solves part of the problem, but it creates a problem. If you are looking at your system of education, you are funding everything. The superintendents that are calling in, you're paying for them. So what you really are trying to do is solve the problem of pink slipping of teachers. And this early funding probably would solve that, but it doesn't address it, because in your bill you don't have anything in there that says we're going to fund teachers in our bill in the appropriation early so that the districts can decide when they want to do the rest of their budget. By holding the teachers in the budget with the entire budget, you created the problem that you have. Districts are going to call you up and say, we need a decision on teachers early. We'll give them the money for the teachers. You know how much they spent for teachers last year. Give them that amount of money, guaranteed, and say, that's going to be always out of here in the first 90 days of the session. That way they can retain their teachers. They don't have to pink slip any of the teachers. They can build their budget hoping they're going to get the same amount of money they got last year for everything else in the system. The problem is your system. You have a system of education that is a block grant system.
if you pull out the teacher funding component and block grant that separately, perhaps transportation at the same time, then you end up with a good system. This will solve the problem, but it creates a precedent of you might end up with other agencies. Who's going to stop the police from showing up next year and going like, we want early funding of state troopers? So if the problem you're trying to solve is pink slipping of teachers, then fund the teachers early. If you guarantee the districts, we will fund your teachers at last year's level based on your October seat count from last year. If it's just to prevent the theater of everybody showing up there, going, we need more money, having the districts trot teachers out as hostages, this is not going to fix it. So in your system, try to look at the part that what is the component you want to fund? You probably want to fund your teachers first. Everybody else is secondary. And as you listen to the people testify, remember, if they're testifying that they're a superintendent, if they're a school administrator, that's part of the system you created. They are going to always be an important part of their own budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nice, do we have any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, thank you. I'd also like to recognize that we were joined earlier by Representative Tuck. Thank you for being here. And next up, last person on the off-nets, John Kelly. John, if you're there, I see you're from Homer. If you could just state your name and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, hi. This is John Kelly from Homer, the District 9 member of the Board of Education in the Kenai Peninsula Borough. And I'm calling in today to support House Bill 287. I really appreciate Paul Seaton's work on behalf of education within the state of Alaska, and also would like to thank the many other sponsors. This bill, if passed, will assist our school district in retaining the talented staff that we work really hard to recruit, and also protect our investment of the professional development resources. I understand the current fiscal environment, and I'm willing to make the most of this funding proposal, with the certainty of securing our budget in time to reduce the amount of pink slips we issue at the end of the school year. I appreciate your time, and please support House Bill 287.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Do we have any questions for Mr. Kelly? Seeing none, we'll move over to the Homer LIO, where we have one person, and then we will move to the Juneau LIO, where we have, it looks like, eight people here in the room. So with that, Kelly Cooper. Kelly, if you could state your name, your affiliation for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kelly Cooper, and I'm a resident of Homer. I'm a mother and grandmother and continue to be an advocate for appropriate and stable funding for our tremendous Alaskan schools. I support HB 287 for the following reasons. The entire state is painfully aware of the fiscal issues we are facing, and I appreciate that legislators know education cannot sustain additional cuts. The future of our great state relies on today's students being successful adults in the future. Part of this formula is the excellent education they will receive from teachers and staff that have the security to focus on our children's education rather than the prospect of a potential layoff and move. As a member of the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly, school district funding is the largest portion of our budget, and I take my responsibility in funding them appropriately very serious. The Kenai Peninsula School Board and administration work closely with us year-round on their budget. When we do joint planning sessions prior to finalizing their budget, it's difficult to work off multiple budget scenarios. I'm sponsoring a resolution from our borough supporting this bill at our next meeting. Forward funding the education budget is critical to all districts, large or small. The difference between the school district knowing their funding in March versus April or May will allow better planning for the following year. Our quality educators will not have the uncertainty of whether they will have the stability for the upcoming school year. I ask you to think about your personal situation and the undue stress it would cause your family or business if you couldn't plan what your business revenue or family budget would be. Having our teachers deal with an annual concern over a potential layoff notice does not lend stability to these families, which in turn can cause job searches outside of Alaska for them. I'm certain my comments are not new to you, and I appreciate your consideration listening to them again from my perspective. Thank you for your service to our state, and I ask you to support HB 287. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cooper. Does the Finance Committee have any questions for Ms. Cooper? Seeing no questions, so we'll move to the room testifiers here. And of the eight, it looks like two of them are available for questions. Again, that was Mr. Alexi Painter and then Ms. Heidi Teschner from the Department of Education, Director of Administrative Services. So we've got six people in the room here. Let's see here. Actually, we have five. So Amy Lujan. Amy, if you could put yourself on the record. And also, you were the head of accounting in the Nome Public Schools?
I was, right? Yes. I've worked in three different rural districts, so this issue is near and dear to me. Thank you, Neil. My name is Amy Lujan. I'm with the Alaska Association of School Business Officials, also known as ALASBO. And thank you for considering this important bill, HB 287. My association is strongly supportive of efforts to inform schools of their funding levels early, which is what I'm hearing is the intent with this bill, although there's no date or deadline in the bill. If the bill were to help address early funding, that would address the first priority on our ACSA joint position statements, which I know Dr. Parity has been handing out, and she has more copies available. We were asking for timely funding to ensure sound financial management. So that's what the people in my association who work on the budgets are very concerned with. You've heard from other people about the nationwide teacher shortage. It really does affect the ability to hire people. When you find out about your budget at the last minute, it is really hard to find people, especially who are willing to pack their bags, move on short notice to rural Alaska, and even the larger urban districts are having problems, as you've heard. Also, other classroom preparations. You know, how can you get your curriculum in place? If it's a new curriculum, you need some advanced time for training. You know, these decisions have to be put off to the very last minute. And so it has really put a lot of stress on the people who are trying to provide excellent education. So I think we can all envision, we've seen in our communities those bright faces that come to town in August, September, and they're new and they want to do a good job, but imagine that they're being flown in at the last minute, thrown right into a classroom. There's no time for training on district programs, for cultural orientation, which we've seen is important. And so it's a sort of a setting them up to fail, if you will, and then it's even worse if you can't find anyone to fill the positions that are funded, finally, but you just can't find the people. So that's really impacting the ability to deliver education. Just a brief comment, David Neese, I've heard him testify a couple of times. He was on the phone a few minutes ago talking about saying, well, this is specific funding for teachers. Just imagine if you were to say, well, there's specific funding for teachers, but we don't really know if you'll have any money to pay your electric bill. I mean, it's just not very workable to think about how budgets actually come up, and you're going to have to, you know, pay the facility bills, which are some of the biggest bills, especially in rural Alaska. And so you can't just, you know, fund one part and expect everybody to be happy that things are going to be, you're going to be opening the doors in the school without knowing our other funding. So that would not really solve a problem, in my view. Also, never before has the legislature really directed funding in that way to districts. So I would point that out. 25 years I've been involved in that has not been done before. So I don't really see that as a very workable solution. So just in conclusion, we're also very supportive of SB 131, which includes the date of April 1. We certainly like that, but we greatly appreciate the discussion of how to help this problem with a large workforce that needs to be hired in Alaska each year to help us provide quality education. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lujan. Does the committee have any questions? We've got a question from Representative Guerra.
Lujan, only if you know it. Am I right to assume that it's somewhere over 10,000 pink slips that go out if funding isn't provided in a timely manner, or is that something you don't know off the top of your head?
I don't know, and it would depend on individual districts, their financial picture, tenured versus non-tenured, all kinds of issues like that. But certainly there's that many teachers, and, you know, it could affect that many people. The uncertainty is detrimental to morale, as Dr. Bishop said also.
Thank you.
We've got a question from Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Lujan, you mentioned earlier the problem of not knowing until late in the year and the problem with recruitment in terms of teachers at that point. And then you mentioned that are you aware of specific numbers in the districts that you work with about how many unfilled positions you have going into this year? Is that an actual, mm-hmm. is that a number you can identify?
Well, through the chair, I forgot that part before. Thank you, Representative Ortiz. I do not track those statistics specifically, but I believe that Dr. Parity or the department would have it. I heard in the neighborhood of hundreds of positions that were unfilled as of the beginning of the school year. So that's a big impact on students.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions of the committee? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Lujan. And it looks like of the number I was quoting earlier, on the list was Representative Seaton and Mr. Liebelt. So actually we've got two people on the list remaining here. Mr. Mark Miller with the Juneau School District, if you could put your name and your affiliation on the record and proceed.
Dr. Mark Miller, I'm the superintendent here in Juneau. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify and for your service. I think, excuse me, one of the factors that's making this problem so difficult for school districts is the flat funding we've had over the last few years and our increased costs have caused us to have to budget on a razor-thin margin. We don't have any wiggle room, if you will. Our end fund balance in Juneau this year is less than 0.5% of our total budget. If I had to keep our schools open for two more days, I couldn't make payroll. The amount of money we get from the state determines the amount we can get from the city because we're funded to the cap. And so until we know what we get from you, we don't know what we get from the city, and yet I still have to have a budget in by March. There are statutory requirements to pink slip tenured teachers by May 15th. You just can't willy-nilly decide you're going to do that. And part of that is dependent on how much money we get in the budget and whether the cut reaches the threshold. So without knowing your budget, the odds of being able to cut a pink slip a tenured teacher is about zero. And just one quick note, my CBO came to me in May and said, we need to pink slip our tenured teachers. And I said, or non-tenured. And I said, no, we're not going to do that. He said, do you understand that if that 5% cut goes through, we won't be able to make payroll? And so I went and I checked my frequent flyer miles and figured out how many it would take to get to a South American country. And I said, yes, I understand the risk here, but I'm not going to pink slip our best and brightest and have them go to other districts or other states or other professions. I'm not going to take that risk. We're gonna suck it up and we're gonna make it happen. Luckily, no cuts occurred and we were able to make it go. But we don't want our school administrators being put in that position. We just don't. It's not good for the kids. It's not good for the system. This is a good first step in moving us the direction we need to head. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Do we have any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, thank you. And last up, we have Lisa Parity. If you could also put your name and your affiliation on the record.
Sorry about that.
Now you have 1 minute.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Lisa Skiles Parity, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. I first want to thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning in support of House Bill 287. And I specifically want to thank Co-Chairman Seaton and the co-sponsors who have signed on to this bill for listening to and responding to the pleas of the members of the Alaska Superintendents Association, three of which you've heard from this morning, Dave Piazza, Sean Dusick, and Dr. Dina Bishop. I could easily get the rest of the superintendents to call, but we wanted to just give you the sense of how important this bill is this morning, and thank you for your sponsorship of it. What I've passed out to you is what we call our joint position statements. And the Alaska Council of School Administrators is an umbrella organization that represents the Superintendents Association, the secondary school principals, the elementary school principals, the school business officials, who you've heard from Amy Lujan this morning, and other school administrators. So if you think about school districts, it's the voice of districts minus teachers, although we collaborate closely with teachers and School Boards Association as well. Through the summer following adjournment, your adjournment, we then work to develop position statements collaboratively across all of those groups. It goes through months of work to find consensus and then ultimately be voted on by each of the members in those organizations. So what you have before you has a lot of work behind it and consensus across administrators in Alaska. I want to point out the very first and highest priority, which is priority funding for education. And without reading to you, I want to call your attention to the fact that reliable, timely, predictable revenue for schools is our highest priority. And it does, as you've heard today, help us make sound financial management decisions, which you require of our school districts. This helps us to do that. It also helps us to retain quality educators. And I mean quality because we're also accountable to you and our state for teaching schools with quality educators, staffing our classrooms with quality educators. We can't do that if we don't have our funding in place. And I know you as funding people appreciate that. So this bill, from our estimation, allows for us to address the timing of contracts, which you've heard a couple times, we're under statutory obligation. I want to just briefly comment on our national crisis with education staffing. We're against a backdrop of a national crisis we've never seen before in this country, and certainly we've never seen before in the history of Alaska. We don't have enough educators to fill the positions. Not enough people are going into education, and we've lost competitiveness in Alaska to be able to attract from the lower 48 to come to Alaska. So our shortage is a little bit on steroids, if you will, because where we are used to people coming here because of our competitive nature, we've lost that, and they can get jobs in their back door or right in their neighborhood. So I'll close by saying letting our districts get their contracts out to retain those qualified teachers in our classrooms is of high priority to us. And we see this bill as a way to provide stability to school districts. So thank you again for your consideration of it, and I'm happy to answer any questions. If I may, Mr. Chairman, I did want to respond to Representative Ortiz, who's no longer with us, but with regard to our numbers, just by way of example, in December, we had almost 100 special education positions open across the state. You know, we're filling those positions with substitutes and paraprofessionals and however we can. But I know you join me in knowing that that is not what we want for our students, and it's just one example. And we're happy to provide what that shortage across the state looks like in another time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Parody. Do we have any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. And we've got one last person here in the room, and that is Kathy Wasserman. Kathy, if you could come up and put yourself on the record.
Good morning. Sorry I was late. Kathy Wasserman, the Executive Director of Alaska Municipal League. First of all, I would like to offer support for House Bill 287, and thank you, Co-Chair Seaton, for putting this bill in. As you know, all of the boroughs and first-class cities in this state do provide for education. And while there are many education organizations in the state, we don't do a lot of the nitty-gritty about education, but this affects municipalities as well. And it's all about planning. We are running, to some degree, businesses, either through the schools or through the communities. And the inability to plan and to know what is coming is just a back-breaking issue for us. We need to be able to plan. We need to be able to be successful. And this is one of the ways that could certainly give us more success. I have to say, I think this issue has become a political football at the end of session, and I think this is a very sad place to put football play. So I would hope that this bill would pass. I think it's just a good thing to do to help planning and to help us. We always talk about the teachers that we want to retain that are good, and we can't even really do that. So I would encourage everyone to vote for this bill. If there are problems with it, we can iron those out later, but this needs to be done. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wasserman. Do we have any questions of the committee? Seeing none, Okay. With that, are there any other folks in the room who would like to testify? And is there anybody else online who would like to testify? Seeing or hearing none, we will go ahead and close public testimony for HB 287. And so I'd like to thank everybody who testified today. And so do we have any further discussion from the committee on the bill? Seeing none, we're actually delayed for our meeting by 15 minutes. And so with that, we will go ahead and set aside HB 287. Amendments for the bill will be due to Jane Pearson in my office by 12 o'clock noon on Monday, January 29, 2018. And we will be bringing HB 287 back up under bills previously heard at next Tuesday morning's meeting. And so with that, next up we do have HB 213. I am inclined to say I would love to be available to hear that. And so if we could just take a brief at ease while we figure out what we're going to do here. Okay, House Finance is back on record at 10:09 a.m. And so the next bill we have up today is HB 213, which is an act relating to the Public School Trust Fund. And at this time, looks like we have a number of folks here, along with Representative Justin Parrish, to introduce the bill. And so if I could just ask each of you to put yourself on the record, and Representative Parrish, if you'd like to give a brief introduction, and then we'll take an at ease at the call of the chair. So Representative Parrish, if you could introduce yourself as well as everybody else.
Certainly, I'm Representative Justin Parrish from District 34. I'm joined by my staff, Lisa Worrell, and Alexi Painter from Legislative Finance. So the bill in front of you, House Bill 213, achieves greater efficiency in government. It'll allow us to manage one of our large funds, the Public School Trust Fund, in a way which will realize more earnings and which will allow more to be sustainably spun off to support public education statewide. The details are a little bit esoteric. Essentially, we're modernizing the way the fund is managed, and all the analyses I've seen have supported this. I'm certainly willing to go into detail. The big thing is we switch from the current model, again, sort of an antiquated one, to the more modern and industry standard percent of market value draw. And we're going to be contemplating a fairly conservative POMV draw of 4.75% and there'll be in the bill that's before us, there'll be a 10-year look back. Are there any questions that I can answer at this time, or shall we return to it in a bit?
Maybe what we'll do before we get into questions is we'll take the at ease, and we'll be at the call of the chair, and we'll make calls and send out emails to let folks know when we're back. So with that, House Finance will be at ease at 10:12 a.m. Thank you, everybody, and thank you, Representative Parrish, for the introduction.